Actually, as a private aside, I want everybody who's not Bobby Blackwolf to turn off the podcast and just fast forward about 30 seconds.
You listen to me, Blackwolf. Listen to me. Come within 100 yards of Christopher again, and I will cut your wiener off. Do you hear me, Bobby? Do you hear me? I'm talking directly to you. This is narrowcasting. I'm not podcasting. I'm talking to you, Bobby. I will slit your throat and drink your blood and pour it down your neck hole. I swear to God! Okay, everybody can turn it back up.
As I run away screaming from Joystick's Justin McElroy, we celebrate the birthday of a favorite console and talk to Adam Carpenter, lead designer for Fury. All that in your live calls and chat comments on the Bobby Blackwolf Show, week of September 9th, 2007. Bobby Blackwolf Show, you're on the air.
Calling in to chime in about this net. And
it's your fault, Doc Wolf. It's you guys who buy these dumb Katamari, Catalarm kind of that game.
Bobby Blackwolf back at Dragon Con 2005. I am here at Anime Weekend Atlanta 11. I'm here at the Best Buy in Alpharetta, Georgia, talking about the Xbox 360 launch. DC Nate and everybody in chat's all going, we didn't buy into the hype. You did buy into the hype, you just didn't buy the system.
From a little room in Atlanta, Georgia, it's Bobby Blackwolf.
I'm sorry, Justin. I didn't realize that you were so protective over Chris Grant from Joystick. Anyway, hello everybody, and we're back live. Welcome back to yet another edition of the Bobby Blackwolf Show, where we discuss the current news affecting the video game industry, as well as reminisce about gaming's history. My name is Bobby Blackwolf. If you're listening to us live here on All Games Radio for the first time in 2 weeks, well, 1 week actually, first time in a week, welcome. Head on over to chat.allgames.com and you'll be able to be in our chat room, and I'll be reading comments throughout the night. A little bit later on, I'm going to be opening up our phone line and our Skype line for the first time in 2 weeks. That one's actually correct. Our Skype line is going to be Bobby Blackwolf Show, all one word, or you can call us toll-free in the United States and Canada, 1-866-880-0156. If you're listening to us on the podcast, you can leave me a voicemail at Bobby Blackwolf Show, or you can email me, blackwolf@allgames.com. And as always, I want to thank Kropotkin and Hendrix for providing their biweekly audio game review this week. It was Warhawk, and it was prefaced by another game, but I had to kind of put a stop to that. It's one guy in the UK and one guy in the US giving their honest opinion and a few jokes about a different game each week. We premiere it just before this show goes live, or you can download it as a podcast feed on our website, allgames.com. That link and many others discussed tonight will be on our website, bobbyblackwolfshow.com. So like I said, I've been gone for 2 weeks. 2 weeks ago, I was at Penny Arcade Expo, and we actually put out two shows that week. We got bored waiting for the show floor to open on Friday, and so we did a quick little live show, about four or five people in the audience, and then we did one on our normal time on Sunday night. And what the clip that we played at the beginning, that was from Joystick's podcast number 15, because I had Chris Grant. He was actually hanging out around the media room during the Omegathon, during my show, and I had brought him on, and that's kind of when we learned that Halo 3 was the final game in the Omegathon. And then he ran off to go blog, and that was kind of their response to him doing another podcast. They're very protective of their Chris Grant. I've learned this. I guess he's not allowed really to go to other podcasts. But I did get to see a lot of meet a lot of companies over there. I did get a lot of interviews, and I know that I kept saying, you know, I'm going to let people vote. But what I'm actually doing is these first couple times, other than the fact that I've been really busy at work, and I did another con last week, I've put the ones that kind of had like timed content and stuff up first, and I think this week we're going to be playing Fury, which is a PvP only MMO type game thing. You'll learn more about it. We're going to be playing that today. They have a big money tournament coming up this week, or not this week, this month, and they want people to know about it. So you can stay tuned to that and find out all about how much money you can win playing Fury this month. And I didn't get interviews from everybody, and I did want to talk about this company, WizKids. They don't do video games. They do tabletop board games, tabletop games really, with miniatures and stuff. And I got to sit down with them, and I got to see Halo Action Clicks, which is basically like Hero Clicks, except with Halo characters and with gaming conventions in it. Basically, the Hero Clicks series, or the Clicks series, it's kind of takes all the stat tracking and puts it on this little click wheel that's at the bottom of the figurine, and then you have a board that you lay out on a table with squares, and you know, you can do line of sight firing and all this stuff. Essentially, you take turns moving and then firing. And I got owned pretty quickly when I sat at the VIP table for this. And you know, the miniatures, actually, they did a good job on it, because they even told me that a lot of people buy the miniatures just for the toys, not really to play the game. You know, if somebody wants Master Chief on top of their computer monitor at work, they're probably going to buy the Halo Action Clicks set to do it. It was an interesting game. I'm not big into the tabletop games. I've never played HeroClix. My friends have played it, and so I don't know, you know, if it's one of those enjoyable things. They did do a lot of things talking about, you know, what it's like playing a video game. Like, you always got unlimited respawns. You had 2 spawn points, and yes, you can camp those spawn points to prevent people from spawning there and to get bonuses for whatever character is sitting on top of the spawn point. So, I mean, I thought that, you know, that was kind of interesting, the way that they worked all that in. And it's basically, it's a deathmatch game, and it's basically, you know, whoever gets to 15 kills first wins the game. And it's a turn-based board game from WizKids, so check that out if you're into it. I think it's already out. It's coming out in preparation for Halo 3. And, you know, speaking of Halo 3, I took a bullet, and I did actually try that Game Fuel, the Mountain Dew thing. It's crap. It tastes like bubblegum. I haven't figured out why, you know, because when I think of Halo 3, I don't think of bubblegum drinks. And that sure doesn't get me amped up to play video games. So, like I said, I am in chat, chat.allgames.com. If you want to talk about anything that we're discussing here on the show, anything about video games, if you want to talk about PAX, if you were at PAX, let us know, and you know, you can call in a little bit later. I did see some people at PAX. Some of our listeners, some people also involved with other shows on All Games, which is really cool. And thanks for coming out on all that stuff. What Up G says, I got one of those Mountain Dews at Video Games Live and never opened it. I bought a 12-pack. So I actually have, like, the box with Master Chief on it. And, you know, I've got one of the cans that I saved and put with the rest of my video game stuff. Yeah. Bacon Bit says, I almost threw up when drinking that. Yeah, it's not going over too well. But you know what? People like me, we're buying one just to have one. And, you know, so PAX, a lot of people are saying, you know, okay, great, PAX is the new E3. And we even touched on this a little bit 2 weeks ago. And, you know, kind of looking back and what people are saying, you know, and reading other people's opinions, you know, we've all pretty much come to the same conclusion that PAX hopefully is not going to be the same as E3 of old. There really wasn't any new stuff going on. Now, I don't know if that's because Leipzig was going on in Germany at the same time. But, you know, really, there wasn't much news to be shown at PAX, except for Penny Arcade Adventures coming to Xbox Live Arcade, which we talked about. And unfortunately, the interview that I have about Penny Arcade Adventures was actually done before they announced the Xbox Live Arcade, so we don't actually talk about it. And they were booked for the rest of the weekend, so I couldn't get a follow-up or anything. Now, the following week, I did Dragon Con, which is a sci-fi, anime, comics convention here in Atlanta. I was a part of the podcasting track a little bit, and if you listened last week, and I apologize to live listeners, apparently I cut off early because of some dead air that I didn't edit out, and the radio station thought the show was over and went to the next song. But I was on a panel for Podcasting for Games, and I also did another panel about doing this, the live show and stuff. So I don't know if that hasn't come up on the DragonCon feed, but I will post a link to it if they do post that up on there's an iTunes feed for all the panels that went on at Dragon Con. And so if that one goes up, I had a great time over there. I walked by Funcom. I didn't get any audio from Funcom this year because they've been at Dragon Con for the past 2 years, but they were showing Age of Conan, which looks like it's coming along pretty nicely, and people were really enjoying it when they were playing it there. And then I saw this other game. It's called Fallen Earth, and it's an upcoming post-apocalyptic MMO FPS. That's kind of what they were saying. And it's apparently very unique in that regard. It's still in its closed alpha stage. They're going to be going into beta in a few months, and we hope to have them on the show a little bit whenever they're closer to that closed beta to talk more about it. But it's in a post-apocalyptic MMO, and it looked interesting at the time. And unfortunately, since it's still in the design and developing stages, not much really is known about it much more than that. But that was the only video game stuff that was going on at Dragon Con. Then this week, I hung out with Tedekin, who actually does a lot of the comics that's going on here in here on All Games. Like, if you look at, like, the All Games Interactive logo, that's Tedekin's work. Well, Ted and I went down to the local art house, indie art house, to watch King of Kong, A Fistful of Quarters. This is the story of Steve Wiebe, and Billy Mitchell, who a lot of people know Billy Mitchell as the Pac-Man guy, first person to ever record a perfect game in Pac-Man, going after the Donkey Kong record. And it was a very enjoyable movie. Now, obviously, anybody who kind of remotely follows the movie here know that Twin Galaxies, which is the official scorekeeping arm of video games, like they do the video game scorekeeping for Guinness Book of World Records, they have issues with the film. And they believe that the film portrays them unfairly. They say that a lot of the things insinuated by the film are completely false. I can see a lot of that happening in there, because, I mean, there were several areas that kind of made you go, you know, scratch your head and go, hmm. But it's interesting that they have issue with the way that their comments were treated. And, you know, because it's not actors playing these. This was actually Billy Mitchell was talking to the filmmakers of this film. And he would say things like, you know, there are some people around here that I don't want to spend time with. And Steve Wiebe is the person he's talking about. And, you know, that's caught on film. Or he tells them, you know, I should try losing. Maybe people want me to lose, but I don't lose. I only win. And, you know, then they wonder why people think that he's cocky. And I will say, at the end of the film, the way that they edited it, and I was in about a little bit over half full theater, probably didn't know the backstory as much as, you know, those of us who probably listen to All Games Interactive or other All Games shows do. They were cheering at the end of the film. So it was a very good movie. I do think that it has a chance to be up for Best Documentary, even though, depending on who you ask, it's not a documentary. But I think that's what they're going to enter it in for the Academy Awards, and I think it has a good chance because it is a very riveting film. It's very well made. Even if it isn't completely factually accurate, you can obviously go to Twin Galaxies. They've got pages and pages and pages of response, including specific time codes in the movie of where they claim something was said or something, and you can go into all that. I would love to get someone from Twin Galaxies on the show, but unfortunately I don't think that they would agree to coming back on All Games, unfortunately, which is a shame. And Mike Hunt says no spoilers, and I guess what was funny is I told Ted this after the movie. It was because, I mean, I've been following it, and it was still a very riveting movie, even though I knew exactly what was going to happen. It was kind of like the Titanic. I knew at the end the ship sank. You know, just like I knew how, you know, I knew all the events that were shown in King of Kong, and it was still a very thoroughly enjoyable movie. So if it does come near you, it's a very limited release. It's only like an art house's, like here in Atlanta, it's only here for a week and then it's gone. Go check it out. Go see it. Chrisville 1724 says, I will buy King of Kong 5 times when it's out on DVD. Mr. DeBucket says, will the movie be in Detroit? Go check. I think the website is Billy versus Steve, BillyVSSteve.com, and they actually do on there have a list of theaters and when they are open. And they've added a whole lot of theaters, so I'm sure that Detroit is going to be getting it probably in the next few weeks. But I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. And, you know, one last thing I want to say on King of Kong is that, you know, because we've actually got one of the people that's in the movie actually on our forums over at All Games discussing, you know, why he does not like the movie and the movie's portrayal. And all I got to say is, when you watch it, and if you read all that stuff, if you haven't read any of it, you know, already, one of my favorite shows is Babylon 5. Actually, that is my favorite show, TV show. And one of the characters in there is Kosh. He's a Vorlon. And essentially his character, he's like in this big, huge, what's called an encounter suit, but big, you know, big, huge Darth Vader-y like suit. And he doesn't speak much, but every once in a while he says something, and it's always something supposed to be profound. And one of his quotes is, understanding is a three-edged sword, my side, your side, and the truth in between. So you got to look at that. You look at King of Kong like that. That's one person's side. And then there's the Twin Galaxies side, which they are posting all over the internet in great detail. You can spend hours reading just one response, and then a couple more hours reading other responses. And then, you know, the truth is somewhere in between. So it's September 9th, moving on. And what was it? 7 years ago? I got to do my math now off the top of my head. Yeah, 8 years ago, I was heading over to Best Buy at about 9:30. Place opened at 10 a.m., hoping that I would be able to get a Dreamcast. I was in college. It was my last semester at college. And walked in. There were about five people waiting outside of the Best Buy. Walked in. There was about 50 Dreamcasts all stacked up in one of the aisles. Picked up a Dreamcast. Picked up Sonic Adventure and NFL 2K, and I think Sonic Adventure and Soul Calibur, and then a game I took back because it sucked, and I think it was like Blue something. It was a survival horror game. But then NFL 2K was delayed, and I couldn't get it the next day. But I loved that Dreamcast, and it was a shame to me that it kind of went away. And today it marks the birthday, and it also marks the month that Sega of Japan is saying goodbye to the Dreamcast. Kotaku has reported that the last Friday of this month marks the end of the official Sega Dreamcast console and peripherals repairs. After that, Sega of Japan officially disowns the product, and you'll be forced to get your machine fixed by someone else. Over on its official site, Sega has posted a friendly reminder online of this impending doom. So, as we celebrate the birth of that generation of consoles, I guess you would say it was sixth generation of consoles, I think, because we're in the seventh now. We're also seeing its official demise, according to Sega. And I know that we have a lot of Dreamcast fans in our chat room, and I know that they're going to have a lot of things to say about it. Now, also, one of the things, though, since we're talking about the Dreamcast, and this is actually kind of old news, but since I haven't been doing this for 2 weeks, this is still new to me. Dreamcast is getting some new games, and it was announced in Leipzig. Arcade Renaissance reports that, you know, with the opening of specially made Dreamcast development kits, or homebrew, the console that just wouldn't die is showing how much life it really has in the little system. It may be getting dated now, but for independent developers, the options the Dreamcast opens up are endless. I can't speak. I haven't been speaking for 2 weeks. Red Spot Games, publishers of the recently released NG Dev Team's Last Hope for the Neo Geo and Sega Dreamcast, have announced their intention to show off two new games for Sega's console at Leipzig. The first title is Downforce, a vertical shooter with 11 levels and a four-player mode. It's a shooter. I'm surprised that Dreamcast has a shooter. And these are not like first-person shooters. These are actually like shoot-em-ups, the space shooters and stuff. The publishers promise a unique scoring system, intense bullet patterns, and huge bosses. No further details are given at this time, but they hope to get first screens and perhaps a video or two when the game is shown off. And unfortunately, I went to their website, and it's kind of down. So I don't know if this actually did happen. It sounded like it did. I remember hearing it did, but this was the article that I found about it. The second Dreamcast game being shown off is Wind and Water Puzzle Battles, developed by Yuan Works. This is a port of the GP2X arcade action puzzle game and is available for pre-order at their official site. According to Red Spot Games, the Dreamcast port will feature a four-player mode as opposed to the two players on the GP2X and exclusive secret characters. And they're going to be released in first quarter of 2008, but nobody knows where or how. Tiger Claw says, I'm sure DC Nate is upset about the news that the Dreamcast is being discontinued. I think he's achieved his inner peace. Shadows Liar says the Dreamcast is dead. Long live the N-Gage. Doomplague says the Dreamcast died when the Xbox was announced and there would suddenly be four players in the market. Actually, I think that the Dreamcast really died because Sony's marketing team just completely destroyed it because they knew what they were doing in 2001, unlike the marketing team in 2007. And Fifth Dream says, I play my Dreamcast more than anything. It was a good system. And, you know, a lot of game developers said it was easy to develop for, which was some people say that was one of the other reasons the Dreamcast didn't do so well eventually, is because the developers could do so much with it so quickly that they actually reached its potential very early in the life cycle. Unlike the PlayStation 2, which was very difficult to develop for, so it took people years to master all of the techniques to develop for it, they mastered the Dreamcast in a very short time, like 6 months to a year or a little bit more. And so, basically, Dreamcast games couldn't get any better than what they were at the very end. And a lot, you know, people want bigger and better. So, one last story before we go into our interview here about current games. And speaking of Sony not knowing how to do PR, this has been a very interesting story. It's about Layer. And Layer has not been well-received by the critics, let's just say. And the Factor 5 president has been very vocal in about how dumb critics are about this. and about how it's really about what the gamers think. And so much so that after the game received universally panned reviews, including from the official PlayStation magazine, you know, the Fanboy magazine, they sent out a reviewer's guide. Now, this is like an instruction manual, but it's much bigger, and it was sent to reviewers as if they didn't know how to play video games. Because obviously, a game reviewer has never played a video game in his life before reviewing Layer. And therefore, the score for Layer got docked down. And actually, if you want to read this large instruction manual, head on over to Destructoid, because they have it. They posted it in the entire manual, and they also said, all jokes aside, the guide isn't chock full of marketing speak as to why the game is revolutionary and more awesome than your god. It's surprisingly devoid of lame attempts to sway a reviewer from saying anything unfair or negative about the game. The only thing we can fairly pick up on is the president's introductory plea on page one to give the game and its horrible decision to force six-axis controls down your throat a chance. Instead of a review guide, this may have well been accurately labeled as the biggest instruction manual ever produced. And it does. It spends like six pages talking about the controls for the game. They show all of the art, like all their concept art, as in this is what we wanted the game to look like, so this is what you should judge. And I guess I agree with the reviewers on this one. Most gamers don't read instruction manuals. Do you? I don't. All that much. And so it's just, it's really interesting about, you know, how they've said, oh, well, critics don't know what they're talking about. And then they're like, oh, well, our office was haunted and there were poltergeists stealing the source code. They actually were saying stuff like that, you know, about how the development was cursed and, you know, like how they made like footage to be shown off at like, I think E3 06, and it was too dark. Like they made the footage and then they delivered it to Sony and Sony had to cut it off the reel because something happened to the footage and it was just too dark and they couldn't show it. And it's like they're blaming everybody but themselves for the game not being up to par. And they want people to grade it on its potential, on what it could have been, rather than what it actually is. Hitstun says, that can't be the biggest instruction manual. Final Fantasy XI was as big as a DVD case. When they say big, it's like actually the size of like a hardcover book. Like, it is huge. And it's like a 27-page hardcover book called The Reviewer's Guide. That's kind of what they were meant. They meant the size, not like how many pages are in it. They called it big. The old critics could read them with their spectacles. Mr. DeBucket says that OPM are not fanboys. They had nothing to do with Sony in the U.S., this official PlayStation magazine. Tiger Claw says maybe the Factor 5 building is haunted, probably on top of an ancient burial ground of buried dragons coming back because they don't like to be controlled by tilting a PlayStation controller. Shadows Liar says, great on potential? Isn't that what the PS3 is all about? Dave 1971-1998 says, Civilization 2 was massive with a tech map and 200-page manual. I still don't remember any manual being like a hardcover book. And Mr. DeBucket says, the curse thing was a joke said to that was said to MTV Games before the game was reviewed. So I take that back. Even though I seem to recall like them continuing on talking about it even after, like more recently, talking about the curse of the game and stuff like that and stuff. So yeah, it might have been joke earlier, but it seems, at least from what I'm kind of seeing around, not saying this is the case, but it seems that, you know, they're still kind of riding that, trying to say, oh, the bad reviews are because of the curse. Okay, so we are going to go on ahead and play our interview that we had for this week. This was done at Penny Arcade Expo. This is with Adam Carpenter, who is the lead designer of Fury. He's with Orin, and that's the name of the development house. He's from Australia. So this is talking about Fury, and he goes into the player versus player aspect of Fury and the tournament, big money tournament that's coming up that you can take a part in. So check that out, and then when we come back, we will be taking your phone calls about anything that's going on in the video gaming industry. So here it is from PAX. Here is Adam Carpenter talking about Fury.
Are you an addict to PvP? Well, be excited, because I'm here at Penny Arcade Expo in the Gamecock booth for Fury. And I am standing here with Adam Carpenter, the lead designer on Fury. How you doing? What do you think of the expo here, Penny Arcade Expo?
Oh, it's really, really good. We were out here last year, and it's really fun because unlike most of the conferences and conventions, at PAX, we're actually talking to the real gamers, the real people who actually buy and play our games.
So tell me a little bit about Fury. What is it?
Fury, I guess in a sentence, it's the ultimate competitive experience. It's a new type of genre that takes the best elements from the MMO and the best elements from the FPS genres and merges them together in a pure PvP, player versus player experience.
Now, is this, you know, because a lot of MMOs and stuff, it's, you know, centralized servers, subscription fees. How is the client server? How does that work here? What's your server status here?
Yeah, Fury is a purely client server game. So everything, all the game calculations, everything in terms of security is all done by the server. What our business model is, because you started to ask that, is you can buy the box and play the game for free as much as you like. And we've put in additional incentives for players who want to play the game more seriously. So not the guys who just want to play casually 5 or 10 hours a week. They're fine buying the box and just playing. But if you want to play the game seriously, 20, 30, 40 hours a week, you want to play competitively, then we have an optional subscription for $9.95.
Now, when you say, you know, when you put the hours of the week, does that mean you cut them off after so many hours or what?
No, we don't cut you off at all. It's just kind of... I guess what we're trying to get across to the gamers is that if you're kind of a casual gamer, buy it. Play it like an FPS. Play for fun. If you want to be an MMO gamer, you want to play it seriously and in-depth, then we would like people to subscribe. And that way you get a lot more of the benefit, a lot more of the depth features out of it. So all the ladders, avatar stats tracking, everything like that, that's a subscriber benefit. Other little things like only subscribers can sell on the auction house. Any player can buy, but only subscribers can sell. Things of that nature.
Okay, so tell me about, like, the different classes and, you know, the different type of characters you can make in this.
Okay. Fury's actually unique in that there are no classes in the game. What we have is a completely classless system where you take abilities and equipment and put them together to build an incarnation. And with a point system, it allows you to customize yourself and be as specialized or as diverse as you like. And any time before you go into battle, you can switch between one of your incarnations. So you can be a healer in the first fight, a nuker in the next. Your guild comes on, and now you're in a specialized crystal runner role because you're playing the Vortex game type. It's entirely up to you.
Now, you started mentioning game types. What type of game types do you guys have in this?
Okay. At release, we'll have three game types. We have Bloodbath, which is a 24-person free-for-all deathmatch. We have Vortex, which is a 12 versus 12 variation on Capture the Flag. Instead of your typical Capture the Flag, where you have a flag in the north base, flag in the south base, you need to collect both flags in one place and you get a point. In Vortex, there's a little buggy thing that flies around called a Percon. And what you do is you shoot him once or twice and drop a crystal. You need to get that crystal and bring it back to your base. Once you get it back to your base, you don't get a point, though. What you need to do is have four in your base at one time. And your crystals are vulnerable, so the enemy team can come in and they will steal them from you. So you need to worry about not just all offense, but you actually have to defend as well. The last of the game types that we'll ship with is Elimination. And that's a 4v4 group versus group knockout game type, so best out of three. I kind of think of Elimination as not being a very fun game type, it's a serious game type, with a lot of min-maxing of incarnations between all the members of your group.
Now, since you're talking about, you know, kind of more hardcore PvP gaming, question I have is, you know, are you going to have, like, a spectator mode, or, you know, are people going to be able to watch some of these matches, especially higher up in the ladder structure, you know, big guild matches?
No, at release, we're not going to. We spent a lot of time designing one, and... because we want to be able to stream it off properly to a server that an unlimited number of people can connect to, the time to do that was more than we could justify before release. But with Fury, we're going to have free updates comparable to like what WoW or other major games have had, and Observer Mode will be the kind of features that we'll be adding to the game post-release.
Now, since this is a big competitive game, are you guys going to be doing any tournaments or anything like that?
Yeah, we'll definitely be doing tournaments after release, but the really big one that we have coming up is at the end of September. We're calling it Fury Challenge, and it's a $1 million tournament spread out over 3 weekends. So the first weekend is for prep and practice and training, and then you're competing over the following 2 weekends. So the practice weekend is September 15th, and then the 2 weekends after that are the actual tournament. And players are competing on 7 different ladders, 4 individual ladders, 3 clan ladders.
Now, how are you getting the million, like, who's funding the $1 million? Where are you getting that from?
It's a combination of Auron and also sponsors such as Dell, I think Alienware, retailers like GameStop, online sites, IGN, and so on. And ultimately, if you think about it, we've got a large marketing budget. What's the best way to do it? Well, let's do something that's actually going to really interest players, and that's going to be a tournament.
Now, so you're the lead designer, and one of the things that I like to ask some of the people that I have on the is, you know, a lot of people that listen to my show, a lot of them want to get into the game industry. So, I mean, can you tell us about how you got into the industry, where you started?
I'm kind of a unique one. I'm a chemical engineer, and my background's actually oil and gas work. So I worked in Canadian oil and gas industry for 4 years. I did a bit of operations engineering, and I also did business development work, financial modeling. And at that same time, I was doing mud development as a hobby. I got to the point where I decided I want to work in the games industry professionally. And so what I did was I leveraged a bunch of the business modeling techniques, financial analysis techniques, and I developed a system for proactively balancing RPGs. And I wrote a Gamma Sutra article about the new techniques and got headhunted based off of that.
Now, if you see somebody, you know, coming in for a job and stuff, what advice do you have to people? I mean, obviously, as you've shown, you don't have to go to a DigiPen or a school or something. It's more just doing it, you know. But do you have any advice as to what, you know, people should bring in to maybe a job interview?
Okay, I'm actually, I guess, counter to some of the current trends in the industry. I have not seen very qualified candidates coming out of the gaming schools. I strongly recommend that anybody who wants to get into gaming either, A, go get a four-year college degree, whether it's in engineering or physics or art history or literature or journalism, but get some meaningful degree and do games as a hobby on the side. If you're the kind of person who you're not cut out for school, then build games yourself. Get Unreal 2004, 2007, make mods, make levels, learn Flash, learn anything. Because what I look for is people who have good, solid educations, good thinking, and also that they've done games. If somebody sends me a resume and there's nothing games related on it, whether even if they put 50 games or 100 games that they played, I'll look at that. But if they just send me a standard resume like they were applying for a professional engineering job, I won't look at that. I need somebody who is passionate about games, that they're doing it for fun, and now they want to get paid for it.
So when is this coming out?
Fury's coming out on October 9th.
And where can people find out more information about it?
UnleashTheFury.com.
UnleashTheFury.com. You can unleash that fury in PvP. And I will say, everybody, I did play this, and I died a lot. Many, many times. Lorraine, I am coming for you. I did finally kill her once. It was somebody else in this booth, but they kept killing me. Thank you very much for your time. UnleashTheFury.com. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thank you.
This is a story of one man's battle against a machine. A podcast of epic proportion. A podcast that will change your life. The Bobby Blackwell Show. All Games Radio. The last bastion of free speech.
And I want to thank Dave's World for that bumper. He actually emailed it to me like an hour ago, and I was able to put it in. So thank you for that. You can email me a bumper, or you can Skype it in. Either blackwolf@allgames.com or Skype it in at bobbyblackwolfshow.com. You can leave a voicemail and say whatever you want about coming back to the Bobby Blackwolf Show, and we'll be playing it here on the air. So I'm going to be opening up our Skype line and our toll-free number here, Bobby Blackwolf Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and talk about the Dreamcast, or you can talk about Penny Arcade Expo, or anything that we've haven't been talking about for 2 weeks. And I did get an email from Silent Wind, actually, and he was asking, I mean, this is kind of more of a podcasting type thing, but it won't take long to answer. He was asking because the explicit tag has been on the show in iTunes for a while, and that's because Gamer Andy doesn't know how to not curse. I've kind of decided for my show that I don't need to curse to get my point across, so I don't. And because of that, I don't have to set the explicit tag. Unfortunately, some other people cannot do that. They have to emphasize what they're saying with a four-letter word. So that's what happened because other people were involved with the show for the past 2 weeks. And from now on, you know, until I have another show that's at another location, the explicit tag's not going to be on, so you don't have to worry about it. Okay, so the bumper was by Dave 1971-1998 in our chat room. It was Dave's World. He didn't actually sign it, but that's what his email was. Mr. DeBucket says wants me to talk about the PS1. It also came out on September 9th, is what he was saying, along with the Dreamcast. The PlayStation 1, I always thought the Saturn was more superior than that, but obviously the PlayStation 1 was better and stuff. I didn't get one for a couple of years because that was before I started buying all the consoles, right when they came out. So I didn't get it until after Final Fantasy VII had come out and I had played it. And so, but I mean, it's really persevered, and I mean, they were still making games for that until what, like 2005 or something like that. I mean, they would still release like the Final Fantasy anthologies on PS1, and Madden games would still come out on PS1. So it was a pretty solid system, except for the fact that it didn't work all the time. You know, so I know a lot of people had to turn theirs upside down to get CDs to read. At least the original, the PSX, which is the code name for the original one. So hang on, let me take this call real quick. Curtis, you know that I keep trying to hang up on you, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so why do you keep calling in if you know I'm trying to hang up on you?
Maybe it's the cell phone. I got a question.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. We're going to have a Curtis-free show here. Sorry, guys. Dave 1971-1998 says the Dreamcast has great homebrew games being released. And, you know, that the Dreamcast has been, you know, staying alive because it is kind of easy to code for, even if Sega is dropping official support. There's still a lot of independent games being developed for it. And people actually want me to let Curtis ask his question. So if he calls back in, I'll answer it and let him ask his question. Okay, so we do actually have another call here, so I'm going to go ahead and pick this up. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Bacon Bits.
Hey, man, what's on your mind?
Not much. I just wanted to ask you, have you played Metroid Prime 3?
Unfortunately, no. I've been. It sucks that I've been traveling so much and doing other things that I haven't actually sat down and played it here. I played it like at E3, but it's not the same now. Have you?
No. I was just curious because I've heard mixed reviews. Like some people say it's pretty easy, and others say it's hard. I don't know. I picked up Metroid Prime 1 recently, and that's pretty hard. So I hope. The third one is hard.
Yeah, that's what I have been hearing a little bit, that it is kind of a throwback to the, oh my god, the frustration is setting in, you know, the repetition of the old Nintendo games of old. So that's what I've heard, but I have no firsthand account of that.
All right.
Cool.
That's it.
Thank you for calling in.
All right, no problem.
Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype. 1-866-880-0156. I apologize that I haven't been able to play that many newer games recently. It's just the whole having a life thing right now is kind of getting in the way. But it's in my Gamefly queue. Fifth Dream says, I played Metroid Prime 3 when they called it Super Metroid. Don't need it again. And Tiger Claw says, sucks that the news about Metroid Dread was debunked. I think that was what? That was the new 2D game that they hinted about in Metroid Prime 3. And it was more of like a joke type of thing. Okay, so we have this call coming back here, so I'm going to go ahead and grab it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this? Now he's going to stay silent. Hi, Curtis. See, now he's calling just with dead air, just to derail the show. So, if you actually want to call in and talk about video games or PAX or the Dreamcast or anything like that, Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. One other thing that I did kind of want to mention that did happen was news that came out of PAX, actually, and it's something that actually kind of came up. It's, you know, it's been coming to me because I've actually done work with it's another show. It's called the America's Video Game Expo, and it's in Philadelphia. It started 2 years ago, and I went last year, and it's basically a game show, but it was born out of a classic gaming festival, and I'm going to get to that in just a second, but I'm going to go ahead and take this call. Bobby Blackwell Show, you're on the air. Who is this?
This is Mr. DeBucket.
Hey, Mr. DeBucket, what's on your mind?
Oh, well, I mean, no one's talked about the PlayStation. Apparently, you didn't get it, so, you know, I just wanted to say that. You know, I think it was a great console. And
yeah. And
the launch, I thought it was a really great launch, probably my favorite, because, you know, it had Twisted Metal, mm-hmm. It had Ridge Racer. I like those games, and it's also... Since, you know, the first console, PlayStation, that makes, in the U.S., PlayStation 12 years old.
Right.
So, I thought people would make a little bit bigger of a deal, but I guess no one likes Sony anymore.
Yeah, so. Well, I mean, it's not that we don't like Sony, it's just they've made a lot of bad moves recently, I guess. But I guess 1995, for me, the reason I didn't get it at launch is just because I was still in high school and didn't have the $600 at the time.
It was
pretty high. It was $400 or something? Or 300, which
300.
Was... 300. Okay, it was 300, which was a lot. It was a lot more... Yeah, I got that and the Neo Geo mixed up in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah, the 300... But, I mean, still 300 back then, I mean, you can look at inflation. That was still a lot, especially for a kid just in high school. You know, just like 600 is a lot and 400 is a lot today for a kid in high school. So, I mean, I didn't get it until college, and I bought a used system. And it was after Final Fantasy VII came out that I got it, because I was a Nintendo kid anyway, and I was a Nintendo 64 person.
Nintendo 64 more expensive at first? Was that because there wasn't any units?
It was more there weren't any units. Because I think
a lot of people raised the price up. They ran out.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was still like 200 or 250. I think 200. And but I don't remember. Like, I didn't actually research all that stuff. So, I mean, I could be completely wrong, and somebody's going to email me telling me how dumb I am.
But they had great titles. I remember playing Twisted Metal all night.
Yeah, and it was interesting. Like, in the beginning, they had the big, tall CD cases, and then they finally switched down.
One had, like, for Warlock, and I think there's a Descent port I liked really much, and another game which I really tried to find, it was, like, I think it was called Assault Rigs, but I only played it once, and I'm still looking for it, but it was a cool, like, Tron tank game for there. They had these, like, really huge cases, and then they used the small ones later on, and...
Yeah, so let me ask you this. What did you think of Sony's directive that they had at the beginning of the PlayStation launch? They've obviously, like, removed this directive since then. But when the PlayStation 1 came out, they told developers, you cannot make anything, any 2D games. Everything had to be 3D. What did you think of that?
Well, basically, they want to be in the minds of consumers, you know, the first 3D-only console, basically. And they're kind of doing that now with PlayStation Network. But I thought that's, like, a really great idea, you know, until they prove themselves, because, you know, they're new. And if they come in really big, you know, that's going to be memorable, that every game is next-gen, and no one can say, well, that game looks like, you know, a Super Nintendo game or Genesis game. That, you know, they really want to decide themselves. And also, most of their IPs were new. I mean, they didn't have a Mario, really. They didn't have a Sonic. And, yeah, I thought that was great. But, you know, things they've done now over the years, you know, it seems that they're not really doing that anymore besides maybe the PlayStation Network. You know, they want, like, big games like SOCOM Confrontation and Warhawk, you know, to be downloadable rather than smaller games. But, I mean, I played Kudaragi.
Yeah.
He apparently, like, well, now that he's gone, everyone's talking bad about him. And apparently he caused a lot of problems and tried to become, you know, a guy that everyone had to go through to make any decision.
Right.
And,
Yeah, well, I mean, at least with PlayStation Network, they still are doing the independent titles, like, you know, Everyday Shooters coming out. That's a big one I'm on. But
And also they're getting quality ones.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, there are some really good ones that are up there. But, like, the 3D thing, it was like, you know, to me, I was like, there's still a lot of gameplay you can do in 2D. Like, there were a lot of great 2D fighters that were not allowed to be on the PlayStation 1 for the longest time. Like, you know, Street Fighter couldn't be on PlayStation 1 because it was in 2D.
Well, there are some, like, I think kind of, I guess you can call them 2D if it's a side-scrolling game, but I think, yeah, there's some, like, kind of 2D games with just 3D character models that came out around then.
Yeah.
And I guess they let that pass by.
Yeah, they let it slide, but, you know, it was kind of like Sony at the time, it sounded like, you know, they were basically just saying, you know, you can't have a good game in 2D anymore. It's all 3D or nothing.
And I think they're just trying to, like, be the first to kind of pass that mark and be the new people also at the same time and say, hey, we're on the market now, and we're just as good as anyone. In fact, we're doing better than them, and we're new. And
yeah,
it was more like, if they didn't do that, it just would have kind of failed, and they would have lost a lot of money. But, I think now Sony just needs a kind of regime change. And I think Kasarai will probably do something better than Kudaragi did. And Dave Character left, and he was pretty good, and he had a tough job because of past mistakes.
Yeah, having to clean up the mess from other people and stuff. That is not a job I'd wish on anybody.
Yeah, they're basically just rebuilding and kind of redirect. And probably at the beginning of this year, they've been doing pretty good PR-wise.
Yeah. Yeah, they just, you know, I'd like to see them finish up Home. I still haven't heard when they're sending that out. Like, that was supposed to be
in November. It was planned for, like, fall.
Right.
For, like, the big was going to be fall. And I think it's going to be either, like, late October, or at least the Europeans will probably get before us. I bet you they will.
Yeah.
Just because I think it's mainly developed by SCE in Europe. So, I think we're going to get it in November, and it's probably either going to be downloadable for PlayStation Store for free, or it'll be an update as its own column on the cross-media bar.
What they were saying at GDC is that it would be an update on the cross-media bar, so it's going to be actually a part of the firmware.
Oh, okay.
At least that's what they said at GDC. Now, if that's still the case, I don't know, but that's what they were saying at GDC.
Yeah, probably a good idea to do that anyway, so.
Yeah.
Rather get, like, home a very important application mixed up with all the rest of your downloadable games and
right.
PS1 games and all that other crap.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's basically it for my call. Just
okay.
Happy birthday, PlayStation.
And happy birthday, Dreamcast.
Yeah.
Oh, he didn't like me saying that.
I wasn't much of a Sega person anymore at that time, so.
Gotcha.
Okay, see ya.
Thanks for your call. So, Bobby Blackwell show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156. I didn't know before this that the PlayStation 1 was launched on September 9th. But, happy birthday, PlayStation 1. It had a very good run, as did the PS2, and people are still holding out that PS3 will have a good run or not. I think they will in the end. I think the PS3 will pull it together in the end and at least have a good run, even if they aren't number one. But it's just going to take some time. It's going to be a little rocky. Hitstun says, Sega should have had an ad campaign. Here are the games you will not see on PlayStation. 2D fighting games, 2D platformers, and 2D puzzle games. So we do have another call here on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and grab it. Bobby Blackwell Show, you are on the air. Who is this?
This is Curtis.
Hey, Curtis. So what was your question, man?
I got a question for you. It's
okay.
About the Dreamcast.
Right.
And comparing to that future consoles.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say, for example, if Apple decided to make a gaming console for the 8th generation video game market, would it fail just like the Dreamcast?
I unfortunately left my time machine at home. And wait a minute, I'm at home. I left it at work. And so I really don't know. I mean, it really just depends. I mean, everybody thought the Xbox 360 was going to fail just like the Dreamcast, and it didn't.
Yeah, me too.
Right.
A couple of years ago, when I heard an announcement about the Xbox, I knew that it's going to bomb because it won't compete with Microsoft or Sony or the Nintendo.
And it didn't. The Xbox didn't bomb, and the 360 is doing really well. So thanks for your question, man.
Okay, bye.
That was because everybody got really upset when I hung up on him earlier, so I decided to go ahead and let him ask his question. Bobby Blackwell Show on Skype, 1-866-880-0156, if you want to call in and talk about any of this. Tiger Claw says Apple's already in the gaming market, sort of, with those iPod games. So to continue on my story, since we're hitting to the very end here, to continue on what I was going to talk about, I've done some things with the America's Video Game Expo, which is a Philadelphia-based gaming convention. Last year I did a trivia game from there. I was emceeing some of the events, and basically I was one of the only media outlets actually covering America's Video Game Expo. And I've known the owner, Ed Fleming, for a couple of years. He is the founder of the America's Video Game Expo. I met him back in the when I used to go to the Philly Classic Gaming Expo, which was also up in Philly. And essentially, if you look read Penny Arcade at all this week, you saw a message from Gabe about competing conventions showing up. And one of them was E for All. They actually had these flat-screen chested women outside with TV screens promoting E for All, and then were handing out swag to people outside of the convention center of PAX saying, here's a new video game convention in Los Angeles, trying to promote E for All. Ed Fleming was also there from America's Video Game Expo, and actually I had witnessed a conversation between Ed Fleming and one of the people at Penny Arcade back at E3. In fact, I kind of introduced them to each other, so I don't know if this is my fault or not. You know, and he said that he was going to be out there talking, you know, looking at the convention and stuff, and that they really should work together and stuff because, you know, more game conventions is only a good thing. And I tend to agree. You know, there doesn't have to be only one show, especially if one's on the West Coast and one's on the East Coast. There's no reason they can't work together. Well, unfortunately, as the story on Penny Arcade goes, they claim that Ed was going around harassing the enforcers, as well as some of the people in the exhibit hall, some of the booth participants, to try to get them to come to his show. But basically, he got drunk on a Friday night of PAX and got into a tussle with the enforcers and started hitting on them, was really wasted, and was hitting on them and basically said, you know, here's where the real party's at, and gave him his business card, which actually is a coupon to get into the America's Video Game Expo. And they didn't want to pull his badge, even though they could have, but they got him to leave the premises, and they wanted to pull his badge, but they didn't want him to get really belligerent because they didn't know what kind of person he was drunk. And they pulled his badge, and they kicked him out on Saturday night. The original story says they kicked him out Saturday morning, but it was actually Saturday evening that they kicked him out because I actually saw him on the show floor on Saturday afternoon in Sony's booth. So, unfortunately, what this has done, you know, organizers of gaming conventions getting drunk is nothing new. A lot of them do it. Like, you know, you can look like the classic gaming expo guys. They love to drink. The thing is, though, that the reputation for America's Video Game Expo has really been damaged in the public eye. There are people out there that believe that Ed Fleming is not that great of a guy himself, and they've known it for a while, and this is kind of the first time everybody else has seen it. And I actually did ask Ed about it. I emailed him, and he basically said that there was a lot of embellishment and untruths told in the story on Penny Arcade, and he's working with them to try to get it removed and come to a peaceful resolution. And I haven't heard anything back, and Penny Arcade hasn't stood taken back from whatever they said. So essentially what I'm saying is that there are a couple of people here that, you know, listened to our show about America's Video Game Expo last year. I'm not going to be there, and this year I'm not going to be supporting it at all. Don't fly in from out of town for it, because it had some issues that I thought that he would be able to work on, but now that he's kind of ruffled the feathers of Penny Arcade and the Penny Arcade fans, they're ruthless, and you just don't mess with them, and you should really be on your best behavior. And so I don't know how much support he's going to get this year, and so I'm not going to be making the trip up. If you live in the area, go ahead. It's going to be in downtown Philadelphia at the Philadelphia Convention Center first week in November, but only if you're in town and stuff. Don't, like, make travel plans to it or anything, because I don't think it's going to be worth it. I think he's got a very big uphill battle. He had an uphill battle before, and he just decided to get on a larger hill now. And so I can't support it, and you can read more about it over at Penny Arcade. And What Up G asks, you know, which of the last shows coming are you going to? I'm not going to any now. I was considering going to America's Video Game Expo, and now I'm not. And also, just for budget reasons, I'm not going to E for All either. So I'm kind of strapped for cash. Unfortunately, that's what happens when this is a hobby. And since we're done for the night, that's it. I'm not going to be taking any more calls. I do want to say that, you know, and this is something I'm going to put right at the very end. Next week and the week after, the shows, live shows, are going to be on Saturday night. And this is because I have a friend coming in from Japan, and he's going to be actually here Sunday night, and we're going to have, like, a couple of our friends over, because he's somebody I knew from college, so we're going to have a lot of people over here, and it's not really conducive to doing a show, so I'm going to have to do the show on Saturday night, and then the following week, I am going to be out of town, so I've got to be somewhere Monday morning, so it's one of those, and so I'll be traveling Sunday night, and so I won't be able to do the show. So for the next 2 weeks, we're going to have Saturday shows, which is going to, you know, impact the audience a little bit, and we're going to have some interviews and stuff. I will have the forum thread up to see what interviews you want to hear. And I apologize if people are coming in on Sunday to hear the show. It's just, this is real life getting in the way. Like I said, it's a hobby. So I've been pretty good about having them on Sundays, but for the next 2 weeks, it's going to be on Saturday. So thank you for understanding, and we'll be back soon. And Saturday, it will be still at its normal time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. So check that out. So yeah, that's what it's going to be next Saturday, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, here on All Games Radio. Still going to go for an hour. It's still going to be the same format, just taping it on a different night. And I really apologize, because I know Saturday night's a very hard night to get out. So, you know, check in with us live and interact with the show directly, and it might have a smaller chat room, so you might have a better chance of getting in. Feel free to leave a voicemail with us on our Skype line, Bobby Blackwolf Show, or email me, blackwolf@allgames.com, if you can't be here and you want to comment on anything. But we would not be able to make the live show work without the help of the chatters. AGN, Giants versus Cowboys, Chrisville 1724, GK128, Hendrix, The Rob D, Burning Paper Sun, Bird, Doomplague, Fifth Dream, Ichiban, Mako, Seymour Booties, Shadows Liar, The Matrix, THK, Agriel, Alpha Cananagram, Alt, Amesatsuma, Bacon Bits, Binary 667, Blindside, Citabria, Crispy, Curtis, Dave, 1971-1998, Daz Genetic, DeBlue Guy, Decipher, Digital Firefly, DJ Dark Knight, Dungeon Buster, Engda 59, Footy Monster, Funnydale, Havoc 978, Hitstun, Interlogic, Johnny 5, Just Insane, Maximilian, Mayor Young, Mike Hunt, Mr. Elusive, Mr. DeBucket, Pistol Pete, Racing Freak 92, Sex Raptor, Spike Spiegel, Stickaxe, Stony Man, Sunbun, TDB 30, Tiger Claw, True, Valerno, VXJasonXV, What Up G, Wilcon, Zombie Princess, and DR4EV. And that's it. I'm going to go back. It's a triple experience point weekend in Guild Wars if I do missions. So I think I'm going to go back and do that until midnight tonight Pacific. And we'll be back next Saturday with more interviews from PAX. Thanks for sticking with it. See you guys. Bye.
A winner is you. The views and opinions expressed on tonight's broadcast are not necessarily the views and opinions of All Games Productions. This file may be freely distributed provided the original content is unedited and proper attribution is retained. For more information about All Games programming, go to www.allgames.com.